Commission's meeting, June 8th, 1999, 8 a.m., in Hearing Room B. Senator Starr, Chair.
Elections Committee. We're starting late, as per usual. We're going to open a work session on House Bill 3280. The chair would like to move the bill as we received it without amendments.
Chair, I'd move House Bill 3280A in gross to the floor for due pass recommendation.
Senator Bryant has moved House Bill 3280 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Senator Bryant?
Aye.
Yes.
Aye. Having received the necessary majority, House Bill 3280 is moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Chair will carry. We don't. And open that. Public hearing on House Bill 3201.
Chair, members of the committee, Paul Cosgrove representing Dry Creek Landfill. Written testimony is being distributed, and I'll be very brief and then welcome any questions the committee has about this bill. The bill addresses an issue of solid waste advisory committees. Back in the mid-1980s, when the city of Portland was closing its St. John's landfill and Metro was looking for a new landfill site, this legislature decided that it was appropriate that if that regional landfill was outside the metropolitan Portland area, that the local county, the host county, should have a citizens advisory committee of local citizens to discuss issues involved in siting and operation of the landfill. And so this legislature passed ORS 459-320 through 459-335 to establish requirements for a citizens advisory committee in that kind of circumstance. Since that time, a number of local governments, counties, and even some cities have established citizens advisory committees for solid waste just generally to deal with their local landfill, not a regional landfill, to deal with their solid waste collection, to deal with recycling and waste reduction. And now, in the circumstance where a county has one of those general solid waste advisory committees and it has a landfill that becomes a regional landfill, it's faced with a duplication of having two citizens advisory committees. What this bill simply does is eliminates that duplication. If a county has already established a citizens advisory committee and its landfill becomes a regional landfill under the definition under state law, it does not have to appoint a second committee and operate a second committee. As amended, the bill was passed by the House in the Water Environment Committee by a unanimous vote and has received 57 votes on the House floor. As amended, it was supported by the Department of Environmental Quality and Oregon Refuse and Recycling Association. I don't believe there's any opposition to the bill. I brought it, requested the introduction, and Representative Patridge was trying to do so on behalf of Dry Creek Landfill, which is in Jackson County down in Medford. It is not currently a regional landfill, but is likely to become one in the near future because it receives a lot of solid waste outside its county boundaries, and that is the definitional dividing line between someone who is a local landfill and a regional landfill. I'd be happy to answer any questions if the committee has any.
Questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
DEQ representative appeared and spoke with.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Lori Honor from DEQ, came in, she is testifying right now in another hearing, indicated her support for, and DEQ's support for House Bill 3201A in gross.
Further discussion? not to close the public hearing, open a session on House Bill 3201, A and Gross.
House Bill 3201 and the floor do pass recommendation.
Senator Miller, move House Bill 3201, A and Gross to the floor with the do pass recommendation. Further discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Senator Bryan.
Aye.
Senator Cortland.
Yes.
Miller.
Aye.
Aye. Having received the necessary majority, House Bill 3201, A engrossed is moved to floor to be passed recommendation. Carrier. Senator Miller will carry. Open a work session on House Bill 3054.
Mr. Chair, on this particular bill, we heard testimony concerning Section 1, which deals with a situation that's commonly known as attractive nuisance. And what I'm suggesting is that I don't think under current Oregon law, Section 1 is necessary. Because landowners have no legal duty to trespassers to make their property safe, and the attractive nuisance portion of it only deals with child trespassers who are injured by certain duties that the landowner should have known about. And the most common example has been in the past the swimming pool example. And so I would, in my experience as an attorney and as chair of the Judiciary Committee, this hasn't really been a problem that I've been aware of that others have voiced a concern with. And when Representative Mannix testified, he didn't give any examples where the current law hadn't provided those types of safeguards. So I would move that Section 1 of the bill be deleted. Not necessary.
Senator Bryant has moved that Section 1 of the bill be deleted. Further discussion?
Chairman.
Senator Miller.
Senator Bryant, are you suggesting current law already states this, or that is the result of court cases? Or
It is the result of court cases. And I guess my motion would have to include Section 2 since it relates back to Section 1. I think that the current common law dealing with trespassers and attractive nuisance is sufficient, and that Section 1 by what it would intend to do, I just don't think is necessary or good policy.
Section 2.
So Section 2 would also have to be deleted because it only relates to Section 1.
If I might, Mr. Chair, if it simply restates what, in your view, is the state of thinking of the judiciary, what is offensive about including it in our statutes?
It doesn't really restate it. It goes beyond that. It would provide that a landowner wouldn't have any responsibility even when they've created what the law or what the common law would define as an attractive nuisance. And I don't think we should eliminate that particular rest of that particular protection.
Mr. Chair?
Sir,
Courtney. I wasn't here, I guess. How much of a problem is this illegal posting of land, which is Section 3? Is that going on a lot or what? Somebody doesn't own the land, puts a sign on there, right? It says you can't go on there, right?
Right.
That has
been a problem by the testimony received for landowners in Silver Island.
charge them $1,000. Interesting fine. I mean, that's going to line up with other kinds of fines of this type. I don't know. Just asking questions.
As indicated, of course, the fine is up to.
What's going on with Sobey's Island? That's some kind of.
Kind of a conflict there where there's those who farm for a living and those who raise feed for waterfowl and have hunt clubs.
Okay. Well, that's what Senator Bryan wants to do. I'm not sure how to vote. You got the votes to get the bill out. There's something else. I don't know a little bit more about trees, so you got the votes to get the bill out. I don't know how you amend, but you want to build. Is that, how do you do it? Do you have to have your formal amendments in front of you, or do you just do it?
We're going to have to get the amendments.
Okay.
As long as you, probably take some time to get some amendments. I just expressed that I would not support relation on section one. A little further discussion and understand what we're after here is I think it continues to be fundamentally unfair for the owner of land to be held responsible for the activities of trespassers. And just simply tries to state that. And I support that policy, and I have some recollection of the attractive nuisance doctrine and all those wonderful things.
Sure.
Just in terms of weighing the equities, I would think the landowner should be entitled to more protection.
You got some Senator 84 amendments about dog kennels in here.
Right.
What's that all about? Is this making them use your old Maynee type of move? Or where we're going to put them in an exclusive farm use land? Or we did a little Maynee move a few times in another day. Is that what we're, is this another dog kennel in exclusive land use, farm use zone? Is that what this is?
That's what this is.
I see.
It's been there for 50 years.
And so we want to say it's no longer conditional. It can be there for the rest of it. This is a statewide, I guess this is a particular one. What do we call it? Do we say hers? Just for hers, or do we say it for everybody?
No, it ends up being just for her because it's kind of the expansion of an existing name society on the joining property with a 2-year contract.
So is this making for all or just
we're
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I can't get a little light and we also have a sponsor of this bill here, but as far as House Bill 3054 in Gross goes, the issue that we have heard testimony on, Mr. Chair, Senator Courtney, was a dog kennel issue out of Sobey's Island. There's a dispute between the owner of the dog kennel and the owner of the Marking Farms Hunt Club. And that dispute is over expansion of the current dog kennel of around 40 dogs to 75, allowing the permit for 75 dogs, which then allegedly disturbs the Markham Farms Hunt Club. And there's a their bird, their water fowl.
And we're between the dog and the bird.
Yes, exactly.
I'm not voting on this bill today, Mr. Chair. You got enough votes to do whatever you want, but I know this is a real sweetheart.
How's it going, Charlie?
I don't mean to make a big problem going out there with the dogs and birdies.
We have an amendment before us, a proposed amendment. We are in a work session.
I move the adoption of the amendment.
The amendment we have proposed before us is the deletion of section 1 and 2.
I thought you were looking before. Okay.
Yeah, we have that motion before us. We need to deal with that motion.
Let me ask this, Mr. Chairman. Are you intending to come back to this bill based on under concerns, or do you want to dispose of this today?
You know, we probably have to dispose of this today. We're running short of time.
That's fine.
I think that, unfortunate as it may be, we're not going to have time to work amendments and bring this into a form that we can deal with. In regards to the proper procedure here, we have a vote on the proposed amendment.
Maybe if I could, since Senator Byer wasn't there, if I could restate my proposed motion. I move to delete section 1 and 2 of the bill, and my reason for doing that is under current law, and it's primarily case law, we have a statement that there's really no legal duty to trespassers to make their property safe. And that there's an exception if you intentionally set things like shotgun traps or those sorts of things that would be designed to create an intentional injury. The other exception deals with what are called attractive nuisances,
mm-hmm.
and that relates to certain types of attractive nuisance that have a tendency to attract children. And then the landowner does have some obligation to take reasonable precautions, and the most common example of that would be swimming pools. My proposal, by deleting section 1 and 2, would leave the law as it currently exists, and because in my experience as an attorney and my experience on the judiciary, this really hasn't been a problem, and I don't remember in Representative Manix's testimony, him citing a specific example where the extractive nuisance issue had been a burden. So that was the reason for my motion.
That would make the bill acceptable to me. I couldn't support it with 1 or 2 minutes for the same concerns that Senator Bryant just raised.
You considered the dash 4 amendment.
I don't have problems with the dash 3.
All righty. Further discussion?
Mr. Chairman, just very briefly on section 1 and section 2. I don't mind being here represented in any testimony, but that may be because many landowners who might have those so-called attractive nuisances take extraordinary precautions to protect themselves from liability, including building fences, all kinds of extra things that perhaps reason would dictate they shouldn't have to do. maybe because they've gone to the extra expense, they haven't had a whole series of problems. But again, I think this transfers liability to the property owner instead of the trustees. I just have a hard time supporting this amendment.
Let's call a roll.
Mr. Chair, just to clarify, what's on the floor?
The amendment.
Never mind.
Just the one and two.
Conceptual amendment. So you remove sections 1 and 2.
Senator Meyer.
Aye.
Senator Bryan.
Aye.
Senator Courtney.
Yes.
Senator Miller.
No.
Chair Starr.
No. I received the necessary majority. The bill is amended by removing sections 1 and 2. Would entertain a motion to move the dash A4 amendments.
So move.
Senator Barr has moved the dash A4 amendments to House Bill 3054. Discussion. Clerk, call the roll.
Senator Barr.
Aye.
Senator Courtney.
Yes.
Senator Barr.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. I received the necessary majority. The amendments are approved. The A4 amendments. Motion to move the bill.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Barr.
I would move House Bill 3054 as amended to the floor to be passed.
Senator Barr has moved House Bill 3054 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Aye.
Senator Bryan.
Aye.
Senator Courtney.
Yes.
Senator Miller.
No.
Aye. Having received the necessary majority, House Bill 3054 is moved to the floor to due pass recommendation. Senator Barr, will you carry?
Sure.
Aye. I'm going to open the public hearing on House Bill 2885, Representative Byer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, I'm Roger Byer, State Representative, District 28. With me is Mr. Weldon Nussbaum, a constituent of mine, who introduced the bill at his request. I am basically here to introduce Mr. Nussbaum and let him speak to the issue and tell you about his concerns. The bill was significantly amended in the House. I believe it still addresses Mr. Nussbaum's concerns, and I will let him speak to it and be happy to answer any questions you may have that I can answer. Thank you.
My name is Weldon Nussbaum. I'm a resident of the Silver and Oregon area. Good morning, gentlemen, and thank you for hearing me. I have no research, and I do not know how I could possibly research it, so I speak from my own personal experience in favor of the bill. My wife and I purchased 96 acres of undeveloped timberland in Silver and Hills in 1983 while we were residents of Washington State. At that time, the property was zoned for farm timber and was taxed as residential land with neither farm or timber use considered, and was composed of three separate tax parcels. My wife and I met with the chief planner of Marion County that year and advised him that it was our intention to have the property reclassified and to develop into a small productive woodlot operation. We explained that because we are retired and anticipated that although we expect to survive for an indefinite time, we realized that our advancing age would progressively limit our physical performance. Because of this, we advised that we desired to build a small residence consisting of a shop area with an apartment above it, initially to serve our own residential needs and to provide a structure to house and protect the building materials to develop the property. We also expected to eventually use this structure as a tenant house and construct a permanent home of our own. At that time, we were advised that such a plan would be both viable and acceptable if, in actuality, we had two legal parcels. It mattered not that one was 82 acres and the other was 14 acres. If the two lots existed, they could be reconfigured administratively to allow one residence to occupy each legal parcel. A bureaucratic odyssey followed. After initially declaring the property was a single lot, the county eventually determined the two lots did exist, and through the years, and in a scenario that would embarrass even the Keystone Cops, a variety of attempts, including pursuit of county proposed suggestions for workable solution to legalize the existence of a second dwelling on our property, have all been thwarted at some level of government. Some of these, I have been advised, were the result of improper legal decisions, although taken to the Supreme Court, the state Supreme Court, the latter body refused to review the lower judicial decisions. I am of advanced age, as is my wife. She has severe rheumatoid arthritis, and although she remains independent, is limited in her activities by this and other physical disabilities, including heart problems. I have had surgery, heart surgery myself, and I also suffer from arthritis. I no longer enjoy the strength or the endurance which I was blessed with when I was younger. Although the total holdings we have are only 96 acres, we use the services of a forest management company, and there is, at least from my perspective, an overwhelming amount of work that to make our property more profitable should be accomplished by us rather than contractors. Obviously, it's cheaper for us to do the labor than hire it. Now, by us, I not only mean my wife and myself, but our daughter and her family who gave up their home and business in the East to join us. So we would be assured that our goals would be met, and we would be provided the necessary personal assistance that we, as our aging parents, might require. We developed our property with the guidance of the Oregon Department of Forestry and the County Extension Service. All this construction has been concentrated in a small area in one corner of the property, as recommended by the Forest Service. We have made every effort to be competent, thoughtful stewards of the land. We have been recognized by the State Department of Forestry as model tree farmers and have been the subject of an educational film for public use, which they produce. Also, our woodlot operations were the Forestry Department's feature of the Oregon State Fair in 1994. We have a forest plan which was adopted with the aid of the Oregon Service Forester, and we attempt to follow it religiously. My wife and I have reached a stage where we can no longer care for the property as we would have it managed. We have our daughter and our family available to us, and we have and are willing to do so. We also have a housing accommodation plan, but although we are recognized to have a medical hardship, to date we have not been able to use the existing structure, which was built for such usage, as a residence, including hardship residence. Oregon law provides that persons pursuing agricultural activities in land zoned exclusive farm use, EFU, may construct a second dwelling for immediate family members to occupy if they are assisting in the farm operation. Land zone and farm timber are not covered by this legislation. In my opinion, this bill would provide equity for persons in agricultural activity of tree production with the same advantage as those that might be engaged in producing row crops or similar agricultural activities. I believe this bill to be reasonable, fair, and an opportunity to provide equity and equality to all agricultural pursuits. Thank you.
Questions of the witness?
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Miller.
I'm quite confident that the governor and others will describe this as an attack on land use planning. Can you help us get past that rhetoric?
As legislation exists today, I see, probably by oversight, that there's a discrimination between the agricultural activities in EFU zones and the agricultural activities in farm timber or timber zones. I see no attack on land use. I see only equity. And I don't know how many small woodlot operators are in Oregon, but we are not a great number. And even if all of us requested a second dwelling, it couldn't have much of an impact. And I've presented testimony at county hearings, and the Forest Service has consistently, without exception, said that our operation would be enhanced by the presence of younger members of our family.
Does that answer your question, sir?
It does. I just want you to know that I think there's a lot of people who live in large cities who do not, frankly, understand the concept of farming and forestry and who take great delight in making your life miserable.
Well, you know, 96 acres of timber doesn't sound like much, and in a sense it isn't. But even if I were younger and healthier, I couldn't keep up with all the work there myself. And I think those who are familiar with farm situations, as you obviously are, can appreciate that.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome, sir.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for hearing the bell. Thank you. We're going to recess our hearing on House Bill 2885 and open a public hearing on
So in the agricultural activities and land zoned exclusive farm use, if you may construct a second dwelling for immediate family member to occupy if they are assisting in the farm operation. Land zoned and farm timber and timber are not covered by this legislation. In my opinion, this bill would provide equity for persons in agricultural activity of pre-production with the same advantage as those that might be engaged in producing row crops or similar agricultural activities. I believe this bill to be reasonable, fair, and an opportunity to provide equity and equality to all agricultural pursuits. Thank you.
Questions of the witness?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Miller.
I'm quite confident that the governor and others will describe this as an attack on land use planning. Can you help us get past that rhetoric?
As legislation exists today, I see, probably by oversight, that there's a discrimination between the agricultural activities in EFU zones and the agricultural activities in farm timber or timber zones. I see no attack on land use. I see only equity. And I don't know how many small woodlot operators are in Oregon, but we are not a great number. And even if all of us requested a second dwelling, it couldn't have much of an impact. And I've presented testimony at county hearings, and the Forest Service has consistently, without exception, said that our operation would be enhanced by the presence of the younger members of our family. Does that answer your question, sir?
It does. I just want you to know that I think there's a lot of people who live in large cities who do not, frankly, understand the concept of farming and forestry and who take great delight in making your life miserable.
Well, you know, 96 acres of timber doesn't sound like much, and in a sense it isn't. But even if I were younger and healthier, I couldn't keep up with all the work there myself. And I think those who are familiar with farm situations, as you obviously are, can appreciate that.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome, sir. Thank you,
Mr. Chairman, for hearing the bell. Thank you. We're going to recess our hearing on House Bill 2885 and open a public hearing on House Bill 3282. No, the speaker.
We say Emblem speaker.
Yes. Mr. Chair, if I may lead off, Roger Byers, State Representative District 28.
House Bill 3282 was introduced at my request. It's substantially different now than when it was originally introduced. I was speaking with Speaker Snodgrass, who was in the House Water and Environment Committee. We decided to make an originally good bill into a great bill, and the Speaker graciously accepted to have her name put on the bill as a co-chief sponsor. So I would defer any further comments to the Speaker of the House, Representative Snodgrass.
I appreciate the intro. Chair Starr and members of the committee, thank you very much for hearing House Bill 3282. First of all, let me tell you up front that this bill is not intended by any way to circumvent land use laws. What it's trying to do is to recognize the situation that we are in now because of our land use laws that does not accommodate for churches within our land use division. I've brought with me a plan of the growth projections and decisions that Metro has made in the Portland metropolitan area. It's called the Metro 2040 Plan. And I'm going to speak now directly to my legislative district to explain the situation and why I think this bill is needed. The growth projections, the high-density growth projections for the Metro 2040 plan, the majority of the urban reserves are in my legislative district. 55% of that is in my legislative district. Because of that, we are facing in the small community of Happy Valley and Clackamas and Boring and Damascus hundreds of thousands of new people that are coming in a high-density situation. Very little industrial land was set aside for that. The people are coming, and the lawmakers, the land use lawmakers, if you will, have determined that this is where they want them to be, in a dense situation. Not too far from here is a church that I attend, and we are trying to accommodate for that growth by finding a new location for a church. Well, we have a couple of options. We can go into the urban growth area and take away land that has been designated for high density by putting a church in it, or we can go elsewhere and try to accommodate. And that's what we decided to do. Our church, and I'm just speaking right now about one in particular church, although this bill would accommodate many others. Our church has the luxury of being able to afford land that maybe other churches couldn't afford. One instance, over a weekend, we were able to raise enough money for the down payment for a piece of property that we had. It was to the tune of $300,000. So I'm telling you this, that we're not coming to the table because we can't afford to go into an area. Our particular situation, we could. But what we're trying to do is accommodate the growth and not take away from the land, the property that has been designated for homes. We could, obviously, try to build a church on industrial land. However, a community close to where our church is being would like to build is Gresham Community. And Gresham recently, by rule, decided that no industrial land will be zoned churches. And the reason for that is obvious. They do not want to take income property away from their property tax rolls, and I'm not sure that I disagree with that concept, because counties do need and cities do need that revenue that comes from industrial lands, and churches do not pay the taxes that industrial users of land do. So we're caught in a difficult situation. We have no place to go. We, meaning the church community, have no place to go. They can take land away from homes. They can take land away from industrial use if the communities will allow them to do that, or they can go into a farm use situation. A piece of property that we have found is between the two communities of Sandy and Gresham on Highway 26. Maybe some of you have eaten at Heidi's or Ashley's at that corner. Our property is right next to that. It's a very convenient spot for the new growth that is projected by the Metro 2040 plan, also to the communities of Gresham and Sandy. But the interesting part is if we were half a mile further out into the country, I wouldn't be sitting before you today, perhaps, because we could build there. The current laws allow communities to build churches if you are a certain mileage away from a city structure. which would put us further into richer farmland than we are in right now. The bill before you would recognize the fact that churches need to go someplace. And I would like to continue to work with the farm community to allow this to happen in this particular case and many others as we accommodate for growth. The original bill, when land use went into effect, did exclude churches and schools from the land use lodge, recognized the fact that they needed to project where growth was going to be. They needed to allow for some accommodations for, in the case of schools, maybe to buy lesser expensive land to plan ahead. And this is another instance where I'm hoping that this committee and that the Senate will recognize that we all need to be community members, churches, schools, residents, and industrials, in order to make our land use laws work. Quite frankly, there's no place to go at this point in time. Question? Excuse me. I would like to recognize that I was up as early as Senator Courtney this morning, although I didn't jog with him at 4 in the morning. But it was fun to listen to him on my way to work this morning on the radio.
Questions of the witness? Oh, questions. Thank you very much.
I'll be available for questions at any time. I believe that we have some members of the community that are going to come in and testify at some point in time. And if I can be of any help to answer any questions or concerns that you might have, just give my office a call and I'll come right back down or down before you deal with stuff.
Senator Muller, I just want to observe that obviously I'm anxious about this bill because I'm, again, certain that the Oregonian and the governor will describe this as a brutal attack on land use planning. But nonetheless, I hope we can support it.
Well, I appreciate the comment, Senator Miller. I went to talk to the governor about this bill. It's been probably 3 weeks ago now. It's just prior to it coming out of the committee. I wanted to give him a heads up and let him know that I would like to work with him on this bill if possible. And his comment to me at that time was it wasn't on his radar screen, and so I went, oh, geez, maybe I shouldn't have brought it up. I'm sure that it will be, and I will be happy to work with him. The Farm Bureau has come up with several suggestions to try to accommodate situations where we do not want to take property away from homes. And, again, the scenario about the industrial land. But at the same time, maintaining the integrity of the farmland that's available. This is a perfect situation, I believe, in an example of how communities can work together, the farm community can work together with the urban areas and allow for certain buildings to be placed and not hurt the farm community and what they need to do for the rest of them. And being a farmer, growing up as a farmer, I recognize the value of farmland, so clearly it's not that. I'm not attempting to take away from that.
Well, I'd just say, Ms. Sherman, as someone who lives in the suburbs, that this is a portrait of how unduly restrictive our current land use laws are, and it's regrettable that a bill like this has to come before this committee.
Appreciate the comments.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd just like to express my happiness that you heard the bill, and then also my admiration that this, I think, the first time I sat in front of your committee when all five members were present, and I appreciate the opportunity.
Look at what you've done, Eva.
We've dissipated, and we're now in a subcommittee mode, and we have others signed up for House Bill 3282. Liz Frankel, Randy Tucker.
Randy's not in the room.
Is this the name?
Why don't you just walk me up? Probably find Randy. That's Ron Eber.
Ron Eber.
And then Randy Tucker just walked in.
First.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Ron Eber. I'm a rural land specialist with the Department of Land Conservation and Development. We have reviewed A. and Gross House Bill 3282. I believe it conflicts with Oregon's long-standing land use policy to contain urban uses within urban areas. We spoke in opposition to the bill on the House side, and we reaffirm that opposition again today. The bill would overturn the Land Conservation and Development Commission's rule that does not allow large urban churches within actually 3 miles of an urban growth boundary or on high-value farmland. This bill is specifically aimed at allowing a church to relocate on high-value farmland outside the metro urban growth boundary in Clackamas County. It will also end up allowing other large churches serving primarily urban members to locate outside the urban growth boundaries throughout the state. We do not see a need to change the existing policy or to allow large, which is the trend now, what they call them, mega churches or other large urban uses outside the urban growth boundaries. The demand for these churches come from people who are moving into the urban areas. They are not the small chapels and churches that we have seen traditionally in farm zones or in rural areas. These are very large facilities. They are not something that are simply used on a weekend. They are used for religious, educational, social service, recreational purposes. The one in question would have an auditorium sanctuary of over 3,000 people. And I want to point out that this is not, and our testimony and our concern is not over the value of religious institutions. We feel they are important. This is about allowing a large-scale facility, whether it's educational or religious or industrial, going outside the urban growth boundary. The other aspect of the planning program, which is not just to prevent negative physical impacts of large-scale development in farm and forest areas, it's also attempting to promote livable communities and neighborhoods. Livable communities and neighborhoods need more than just an adequate supply of land for residential, industrial, commercial uses, but it also needs space for educational, religious, recreational, and other community-based activities that are needed in the urban areas. They should be encouraged in the urban areas, and they should not be sited away from those communities and the people they are intended to serve. There are alternatives. Churches that are rural in nature have been allowed in exclusive farm use zones since 1963. Urban growth boundaries can be expanded. Rural unincorporated communities can be expanded. And there are also opportunities for at least rural churches on non-high-value farmland. So in conclusion, we believe that this bill is detrimental to good land use planning. It will allow the introduction of large-scale urban uses outside the urban growth boundaries on Oregon's best farmland, and it will undermine the creation of healthy and livable urban communities. With that, I'll answer any questions that you might have.
Questions of the witness.
Senator Mayor, can you develop a view on legislation? Is this a matter that's taken up for the entire department? All members of the commission?
Chair Starr, Senator Miller, the department develops its positions on legislation. We consult and keep the commission appraised of what our positions are on the various bills. This one was discussed, and we also have conversations with the governor's office.
When you say the department, who are we talking about?
The director, myself, Bob Rindy.
And the commission reviewed this testimony?
Senator Chair Starr, Senator Miller, no, it did not.
Would you say they're aware of this testimony?
I believe they are aware that we have been in opposition of this bill.
Did they take any particular position by vote?
No, sir.
Commission. So this is essentially a staff-generated response piece?
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Bryan.
If this bill was not on high-value farmland, in other words, if the soil type for soil classification was not in the first two or three categories, would your position be any different?
Chair Starr, Senator Bryant. No, it would not. Our position has been that urban uses should be within urban growth boundaries or within the unincorporated rural communities. There's also a process where an exception could be taken.
And what would that process be for this particular instance?
Senator Starr, Senator Bryant, the exception process, they would demonstrate that there was, in fact, a need and that the alternatives, either within the urban growth boundary or the other options that I have suggested are available, really were not. And so it's an alternatives analysis, an impact analysis. And it's a plan amendment that is taken at the county level.
Other questions? This one last question. In the instance of this particular church, was it for any exception process attempted?
Chair Starr, Senator Bryant, I know there was not. This particular church came forward through a conditional use process. At the time, there was the Brentmar versus Clackamas County case that dealt with uses in exclusive farm use zones. Some land use attorneys and the hearings officer in Clackamas County felt that overturned the commission's rule that restricted certain uses on high-value farmland. That issue was eventually resolved in the Lane County versus LCDC case that upheld our rules. So I believe in that rule that restricted churches on high-value farmland went into place in 1994. And the Brentmar case was in 95. I think the church purchased this property in 1996. And the Lane County case came down in 1997.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Senator Barr.
I apologize if you covered this while I was out of the room, but what is the existing LCDC rule regarding siting churches in rural areas?
Chair Starr, Senator Beyer, the rule within exclusive farm use zones restricts certain of the larger scale uses either within 3 miles of an urban growth boundary or on high value farmland, regardless of where that is. So churches, schools, golf courses, dog kennels, and several other uses I can't think of off the top of my head are restricted within 3 miles of an urban growth boundary on high-value farmland.
How do you define large scale? Is it defined in law or in rule?
Senator Starr, Senator Barr, no, it's not. It's not defined by the statute. Allows churches, and we restrict it within 3 miles of an urban growth boundary. It's our experience that when you get those uses within 3 miles of an urban growth boundary, they're really not serving the rural community. They are there to get outside the urban growth boundary, and they're serving the urban constituency.
Basically looking for cheap land.
That's part of it, I believe.
No further questions? Thank you. Randy Tucker. Liz Sprinkle. Come on.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Randy Tucker. I'm a policy advocate with 1,000 Friends of Oregon. We're a statewide land use planning advocacy organization that is also with about 5,500 members. We're also affiliated with about 10, I believe, local groups from Curry County to Hood River. I'm testifying this morning on behalf of my colleague Blair Batson, who is our farmland protection expert and but could not make it this morning. And I apologize for not having written testimony for you. It was being faxed in as I was being called in from the hall, so I'll have it for you in a few minutes. I don't have a lot to add to what Mr. Eber said this morning, but if you'll indulge me to just run quickly through the testimony so that it's coherent. we oppose House Bill 3282 for several reasons. First, We believe that urban facilities should be located in urban communities, not on farmland outside urban areas. Urban churches, like schools and parks, should be located within the communities they serve. And we've already heard about the particular types of churches that are the current trend, these very large facilities that include gymnasiums and soccer fields and educational and recreational facilities. Locating these large urban uses in rural agricultural areas that are not equipped to serve urban levels of development is contrary to the land use planning principles that have been embraced by Oregonians for over 25 years. Second, prime farmland in close proximity to Oregon's urban areas needs increased protection from intense urbanization demands, not more non-farm development. Oregon has an extremely limited supply of prime farmland. Much of it is located in close proximity to urban areas. The state has authorized local governments to designate a certain portion of this land for urban development inside urban growth boundaries, but the portion outside urban growth boundaries has been designated for long-term agricultural use. The limited supply of prime farmland outside urban areas is threatened by intense pressure to urbanize. Every legislative session, there's an effort to authorize more and more urban and other non-farm uses on prime farmland outside urban growth boundaries. Because agricultural land is cheaper than land zoned for urban uses, urban facilities will always prefer a site on agricultural land if it's available. That's why we believe that state policy should continue to require urban facilities to be sited within urban growth boundaries whenever possible. And third, and finally, state land use laws already allow urban churches to be sited on prime and other high-value farmland surrounding urban growth boundaries when necessary, when there's a convincing reason to allow this. Oregon land use laws authorize using prime farmland outside UGBs for siting urban facilities when there's a lack of available sites inside the UGB, this bill, HB 3282, would eliminate the requirement that an urban church first show that there are no appropriate sites within the boundary before using cheaper prime farmland outside the boundary. So with that, I conclude my remarks. So we urge you to oppose House Bill 3282 and be glad to attempt to answer any questions so my colleague Blair would do a better job.
Senator Courtney, any clarification? The last year is called the Fred Parkinson Bill. Drunk about Silverton, Oregon. One to cite his church, and we cited it, and he, I remember it so very well. I remember old Freddy Boy. I don't understand why, then, what's going on here. Where have I lost something here? Why do we need to do this, given what we did for Fred?
Well, our view, of course, is that you don't need to do it.
I ask him whatever. I just want to know, because I remember it very, very, I was on the environment. Middle back in there, and I remember the issue. It was a very explosive issue. And I remember where the church is located. Thank God, you're right out there right now in the middle of nowhere. And I'd like to know what this does, why, what's going on.
Mr. Chair, Senator Courtney, I'm looking to the back of the room to see if Ron Eber has any knowledge of that particular case and how that place.
What year was that?
1991, I'm pretty sure, is when we did that. Fred Parkinson Church, you guys for sure are going to go to heaven, I know that. I remember.
Well, and this is a stab in the dark, Senator Courtney. As Mr. Eber testified, churches are allowed now on non-high-value farmland in rural areas. Is that correct?
Yes.
And that could have been something that was changed at that time, but you can tell that I'm flailing on this.
Well, it's okay. I just know we did something back then. We know we did something.
What am I?
It was a Silverton issue, and it was Fred Parkinson, who was out of Silverton, my former mayor, and state rep, and chair. Remember?
Mr. Chair, Senator Courtney, I recall the situation, and I'll have to go back and look in some files. My recollection is that got then entangled in some other land use issues, and I don't know if anything finally passed. I mean, either it was an exception, but churches have been allowed in exclusive farm use zones since 1963, so I don't know.
Is the issue here the cemetery versus the church connected? Is that the issue? I thought that was the issue when I first heard it. Is that the issue?
Within 3 miles.
No. Ms. Frankel, League of Women Voters, and I must admit,
I will tell you what I heard in public testimony on the House side, and it's why the League became involved. We have always accepted the fact that churches, I mean, there are rural settlements, there are, and who's against churches? I mean, I'm a clergyman's daughter, my father was a priest, I was the first woman on the vestry. I have come with good church credentials, but on the House side, what we heard was a wonderful example of what I do not think is a rural church. And what was described was a church with a membership of 6,000 people that would require 15 acres of land. And in order to get this, they have to get an exemption from the prime, located on prime farmland and the size. And of course, what they're looking for is cheap land. But this was the church that was described, and this is why I'm here today saying this is an urban church. It is not a rural church. It is not serving a rural function. And it has nothing to do, I gather the questions were asked about whether a cemetery was needed or not, and it wasn't clear whether there was a cemetery or not. But there was clearly a school. I mean, 6,000 members on 15 acres of land with a school is hardly my idea of the church at Independence or the church at, we've all seen them, rural churches. The League urges that you oppose this bill. Thank you.
I have a question.
Senator Courtney,
who is this committee? Apparently we already did this in Dallas, right? Earlier in the session? Is that right?
Yes.
That. Oh, I don't know what I did about it, but that bill. We did this in Dallas.
I think I can answer that question, Mr. Chair. There was a bill, House Bill 2389, if that's what you're thinking of, Representative Shetterly's bill.
Okay, Administrator, just inform me. Actually, I don't know if it would have been Shirley Dallas. Lane might have done this.
Let me tell you what I know, which is about a bill that was sponsored by Representative Shetterly and had to do with a church in his district, which at least I know includes Dallas. That was the particular situation there is somewhat different from this in that it involves non-high-value farmland, and it also involves land, to my understanding, that's farther away from an urban growth boundary. I could be wrong about that last point. But the major distinction is this.
Issues, and I don't know if anything finally passed. I mean, either it was an exception, but churches have been allowed in exclusive farm use zones since 1963, so I don't know.
Is the issue here the cemetery versus the church connected? Is that the issue? I thought that was the issue when I first heard it. Is that about the issue?
Within the 3 miles.
No. Liz Frankel, League of Women Voters, and I must admit, I will tell you what I heard in public testimony on the House side, and it's why the League became involved. We have always accepted the fact that churches, I mean, there are rural settlements, there are, and who's against churches? I mean, I'm a clergyman's daughter, my father was a priest, I was the first woman on the vestry. I have come with good church credentials, but on the House side, what we heard was a wonderful example of what I do not think is a rural church. And what was described was a church with a membership of 6,000 people that would require 15 acres of land. And in order to get this, they have to get an exemption from the prime, located on prime farmland and the size. And of course, what they're looking for is cheap land. But this was the church that was described, and this is why I'm here today saying this is an urban church. It is not a rural church. It is not serving a rural function. And it has nothing to do, I gather the questions were asked about whether a cemetery was needed or not, and it wasn't clear whether there was a cemetery or not. But there was clearly a school. I mean, 6,000 members on 15 acres of land with a school is hardly my idea of the church of independence or the church that we've all seen. We're all churches. The League urges that you oppose this bill. Thank you.
I have a question.
Senator Courtney,
who is this committee? Apparently we already did this for ballots, right? Earlier in the session? Is that right?
Yes. That,
I don't know what I'm doing about it, but that bill. We did this for ballots.
I think I can answer that question, Mr. Chair. There was a bill, House Bill 2389, if that's what you're thinking of, the Shetterly's bill.
No, I'm thinking about the behind.
Okay.
Administrator just informed me, so I don't think it would have been Shirley Dallas. Lane might have done this.
Let me tell you what I know, which is about a bill that was sponsored by Representative Shetterly and had to do with a church in his district, which at least I know includes Dallas. That was the particular situation there is somewhat different from this in that it involves non-high-value farmland, and it also involves land, to my understanding, that's farther away from urban growth boundary. I could be wrong about that last point. But the major distinction is this. It's non-high-value farmland. The church is already allowed in that case. The only thing that bill did was to allow the parcel to be partitioned so that the church could own the land that it was on. Mm-hmm. And church is allowed already.
Southside of urban growth boundary, yes.
Yes.
Then we have already asked, in statute, we do allow churches and cemeteries. The church is often very people right next door, right? wealthy Lutheran case. We allow them exclusive farmland use, don't we?
Yes, non-high value, and then as far as the specific rules of high value, again, my more knowledgeable colleague.
But it's outside of your growth found.
Right.
The key I want to get is outside of your growth.
Okay, so we do this. But.
Other questions? Yeah. Let's center the gentleman from LCDC stepped up again, probably to answer more questions on the Dallas church situation. If you could further our enlightenment,
Chair Starr, Senator Bryan, and Courtney, the situation in Dallas. This was a small rural church that was serving the agricultural area. It was outside 3 miles from the urban growth boundary. It was not on high value farmland, and the principal issue there. Because it was going to go through the conditional use process, the current statute does not allow certain uses within the exclusive farm use zone to be partitioned. You can't partition a parcel for those. So the bill was to allow a small parcel to be divided off for a church as long as the remainder parcel stayed larger than the minimum lot size. And I think the ownership there was approximately 90-some-odd acres. They wanted to divide off 3 or 4, which kept the remainder above the 80-acre minimum. So the bill was specifically to authorize the land division. It had nothing to do with authorizing the church itself. It could go forward under existing statutes. It simply needed the authority to have the land partitioned.
You didn't oppose that?
You did.
We actually did oppose the reason that I testified against it on the ground that we generally oppose land divisions in farmland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So
we
did not.
We didn't put a letter out or anything like that.
We worked with Representative Shetterly, and we did not oppose that bill.
Thank you. Any further questions? Did you finish your testimony?
I think so. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Frank Wood.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, committee members. My name is Frank Wood. I did represent the large church that I think was being discussed in Clackamas County before I arrived. I apologize for arriving late. I didn't know about the hearing. I want to give some information based on my experience in the state of Oregon and working with churches. I've been a general contractor for 30 years. I've represented over 300 churches in the western United States in design and construction endeavors, and I can tell you that it's a very difficult process in the state of Oregon because of the land use laws. I'd like to talk a little bit about the church itself in general and some specific issues and why it's so important for this bill to be passed. The church today has changed in its service to the community, and churches today are much different than they were years ago when we could see a church sited on a half-block site. One of the reasons the churches need to change is because of land use laws and zoning laws that require churches to have much more in terms of facilities, on-site facilities. Most churches and most jurisdictions I work with, you have to have property enough to allow one parking space for every 3 to 4 people seated in the sanctuary area. That requires several acres of land when you get a church of any size. So it's not simply a matter of putting a church in a on a half-block site in a downtown area any longer. Churches are having to locate where there is available property, and that puts a very difficult situation on churches when they begin to look at 5- and 10-acre sites. 5- and 10-acre sites within the city limits of any of our communities this in these times are very prohibitive because of cost and availability. Most of these sites are designated residential, commercial, or industrial. We have one city now in the state of Oregon, Gresham, which has passed an ordinance against churches locating in industrial land, probably because they don't want the loss of the tax revenue. But it's increasingly impossible for churches to find property that is available for them to site on. The cost of the land, the zoning ordinances, prohibit siting in most areas where proper size of land is available. I represented Good Shepherd Church, the one that's been discussed, this mega church, if you will, in Clackamas County. We did a land search. We could not find property that was adequate, that had adequate access, road systems, and infrastructure that would support the kind of facility that we needed inside the urban growth boundary, inside any city. We found one 30-acre parcel that was zoned industrial, and immediately this prompted the city of Gresham to move to disallow churches to locate on that property. That property was $7 million in cost just for the property.
Senator Courtney, could I ask you a question? Why don't you bring a bill in that would allow us, I don't like to micromanage cities because I was served on city council, so I don't like to micromanage whatever question. To allow us or require a city to have to consider churches industrial and within an industrial zone, within the urban growth boundary in a comprehensive plan. Why wouldn't you bring in a, would that solve your problem since you mentioned Gresham stops you from going into industrial land, and I take it from that, they've got large enough parcels within industrial zones to have a church that's of a mega church size. Is that correct, sir?
They did have one parcel that was that size, and that the price would have been prohibitive even if you could have sited there. $1 million for a piece of property like that for a church, even the size of the church we're talking. The problem, I think, is that from a practical standpoint, is it's really not good business for the church to locate in an industrial area, because that is, even in the worst case scenario, that's an area where there are factories and where there are companies that are producing materials and things of that nature that the city would like zoned in that area.
Well, what about asking them to amend their comprehensive plan in terms of extending the urban growth boundary in a way that could be accommodating?
Well, what I know about extending the urban growth boundary is a very, very complicated process. Not just the city, you've got Metro to deal with, and all the other land use watchdogs that are out there, and I think it's a very, very lengthy and difficult process that nobody's succeeded. To be quite honest, in this one church's particular situation, we thought about trying to incorporate the city as a little community of Boring to try to see if that was an avenue, but that, too, is very complicated and has not been accomplished in the state of Oregon for a very long time. We're really up against a very difficult dilemma here, and I think that historically what we see happening, I've heard urban use versus rural use here. Historically, churches located where the people were, and I dare say that in Clackamas County, which is more rural than it is urban, there is a need for this particular facility, but not just this one, but other churches. historically in our country, churches were where the people were and where the people could come to. And our church is located in a geographical location that allows people to come to that church from a lot of different communities, but many of them rural, like myself. I live out in rural Clackamas County in Eagle Creek area. I know of 10 churches in the state of Oregon that are in a similar situation right now and simply cannot grow, build, or otherwise because since the time of the bill, Senator Courtney, that you were talking about this church in 1991, what's changed is that this law that has prohibited, and it doesn't allow any church, it says exclusive farm use land, high-value farmland, does not allow a church, a school, or a cemetery of any kind. It doesn't matter if it's a little rural 50-member church or a 5,000-member church. It simply says they are not allowed. And I think that goes against what we have seen in this country over time, and that is that churches have been where the population was, where the people were. If we were to allow all the churches that need to relocate in the state over the next 10 years, would it tremendously damage the amount of farmland that we have? I don't think so. If you took the normal size of a church property of 5 to 10 acres and there were 30 churches, that's 300 acres. What percentage is that of the total farmland available in the state of Oregon? I don't think it's very much. I do know that this particular piece of property that was bought in Clackamas County for this church that's been discussed, that the last 2 years that it was operated as a berry farm, the operator lost money and had to cease operations because of the fact that you can simply not make a living like you once did on this piece of property. That's a matter of economics. But,
Senator Barr.
Sir, when they were looking for property, and I remember a map that we had in here a few weeks ago that had all of the exception lands in Clackamas County. It's like it's half again the size of the metro area. Did they look at exception lands, or the laws that exist now permits churches on marginal land?
Mm-hmm.
Did they look at those?
Sir, we have two realtors who we commissioned to go out and find land that was for sale and available. And of all of those properties that were listed through the multiple listings, through different avenues that they had, they did not come up. We were looking, based on the size of the facility we needed for the school and for the church, we felt like we needed 30 acres. I know 15 was thrown around, but it's actually 30. And we could not find a piece of property except the industrial land, as I said, in the city of Gresham that was capable of doing that inside the urban growth boundary.
Was that restricted by availability or restricted by price and availability?
No, it was, we looked at anything that was available. And the only piece that met the criteria of being available and had any kind of a price tag that we could consider was that piece in Gresham, and like I said, it was $7 million.
How big was it?
It was 30 or 31 acres. And they really did not, we did not get very far in pursuit of that because even the realtor was discouraging us because they wanted to divide it up into smaller industrial tracts rather than sell it as one large piece. So back to Senator Courtney's comments earlier, the state of affairs in Oregon have changed since 1991, and it is more restrictive now. In fact, it's impossible unless you get non-high-value farmland. Almost all the EFU land that I have had any exposure to in the state of Oregon is by soils type is high-value farmland, and it makes it very, very difficult, if not impossible, to find a site that's capable. And that's true of Tillamook, Eugene, churches that I'm familiar with in Eugene, around the city of Portland, Wilsonville, and other areas. The church in general is serving a good purpose. And it's not like we're asking for, we're not going to open a door that's going to allow Fred Meyer and all of these other commercial uses to happen. The church is not going to create There's not going to be subdivisions built around the church or shopping centers. It's going to be a church use. It's going to be highly regulated by the design review process that's in place in most counties. We're still going to have to meet all of that criteria for parking, for infrastructure, for access, and those types of things. But we can't get to those issues if we cannot be allowed a piece of property that we can expand on. So it is a tremendous dilemma. It was interesting that recently President Carter, in responding to the Columbine shooting, gave six things that the federal government is going to do to help young people, and that is one of those six things is to fund some programs to help build character in our young people. The church, I would suggest the church is doing exactly that for free. That this church, I have letters from many, many of the area schools, district superintendents, talking about the tremendous positive impact that this church and many other churches have on the local community, the youth of the local community. I think these are good things and things that ought to be encouraged rather than hindered. And I know that we want to protect the lands, and we're not about destroying all the good farmland in the state of Oregon, but allowing a few churches to locate where they can prosper and grow and be a positive influence in the community is not going to ruin the farm economy in this state.
Further questions? Senator Bryan.
Did you try the exceptions process?
We're told that we've heard that works. I'm not a lawyer, but we had a lawyer working with us, Dave Frank at Oregonians in Action, and he said it does not apply here and it cannot help us. I cannot respond to the legal implications of that because I don't know. But that's what we were told.
And it's your testimony that you couldn't find any marginal lands to locate on, that all of it was EFU and with high quality soil based on the classification of the soil?
Yes.
I'm not too much worried. We don't have any high quality soil. But isn't there some marginal lands in Clackamas County that would be available for the needs that you're discussing?
I'm sure there must be marginal lands. I don't know that. All I know is that when we asked the realtors to bring to us everything that was listed or that they knew that was available for sale, there was no land available. Short of going up and knocking on people's doors and saying, "Can we buy your land?" We did not do that. I don't think that's probably an appropriate process, or at least we didn't think it was. We went to the people who were the resource, and that's the realtors.
Any further questions? This property, I believe, is at the interchange for
Highway 26 and Highway 212.
212 crossed there. It's what was formerly Heidi's.
Used to be the Heidi's and Ashley's restaurant, yes, sir.
Along to Tuttle's.
Yes, it did. Glenn Tuttle.
Glenn Tuttle. Yeah.
I
know the property well.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Just comment here. I understand your problem. A group that I associate with on the board of directors, I've just bought 10 acres from the Catholic Church to make the property they had and paid twice the per acre price that you were saying that 70 acres were offered to you.
Mm-hmm.
It's expensive in urban areas.
No further questions? I believe that's all of the witnesses we had signed up.
Thank you, Chair Starr and members of the committee. My name is J.L. Wilson. I'm the Speaker's Legislative Director, and I wanted to speak to the content of the bill, because the speaker was hurried and I don't think could address some of the aspects. She testified to the fact that 55% of the urban reserves are in her district, and you also heard that 6,000 people get their spiritual needs met at this church. And we talk about healthy, livable communities, and we're talking about a facility here that provides for the spiritual needs of 6,000 people, some of their educational needs, and even some of their recreational needs. And if that's not a viable part of a healthy community, I don't know what is. The reason that that church could not site in its present location is because present rules say that a church has to be outside of 3 miles of an urban growth boundary. It has to be at least 3 miles from an urban growth boundary. The speaker's church was caught between an urban growth boundary between Sandy and Gresham that was not 6 miles apart, did not have the opportunity to be 3 miles away from any urban growth boundary. Now, we're not interested in issuing a blank check for churches to site anywhere, and so you will know that the content of the bill, it says that if it's within 3 miles of an urban growth boundary, it can site without regard to soil classification. Everything outside of that line is limited to a 5-acre parcel on non-high-value farmland. Or in the case of the speaker's church, where it is caught between urban growth boundaries that are not 6 miles apart, that is a permissible use of the high-value farmland. That is what the bill says. It has applications beyond just Lynn's church. I hope Representative Crummell gets a chance to testify as he did when it was on the House side. His church is within 2 miles of an urban growth boundary on high-value farmland. It burned to the ground. He cannot rebuild because it's on high-value farmland. So this has more than just one application. And we consciously drew a line in the sand in this bill. If it's within 3 miles of an urban growth boundary, we'll let you site. Everything outside of that, 5-acre parcels on non-high-value farmland. That's the line in the sand we drew, and I hope the committee finds it acceptable.
Sure. Senator Bryan, you said within 3 miles. I think the bill, as Ian Gross says, 2 miles.
Does it say two?
It says that is within 2 miles of an urban growth boundary, regardless of the soil type. And B is that is more than 2 miles from an urban growth boundary.
Oh, then that's my mistake.
So initially, then it started as three and it's been reduced to two.
It ratcheted down to two, sure.
In subparagraph A of section one, there isn't a limitation on the size of the parcel, where subparagraph B of section one says that 5 acres or less. Why isn't there a limitation on the size in subparagraph A?
Two different siting requirements. One permits siting on non-high value, 5 acres or less. The other is on high-value farmland.
I'm not sure how to answer that other than the fact that we wanted to ratchet it down outside of 2 miles of an urban growth boundary, but in an instance where the speaker's church is 31 acres, I'm not as sure what the appropriate lot size should be in statute.
Yes. Yeah, they already bargained property.
Yeah. I believe so, yeah.
I was going to say, why didn't you think about making it contiguous to your growth boundary? Is that because property is already so many miles away from, is that what's involved? Why are you doing so many miles as opposed to you can do it, but it has to be contiguous to your growth boundary?
Well, the present situation is that a church could only site if it was outside of 3 miles of an urban growth boundary. The problem with the speaker's church is that it was within 3 miles of it. Actually, it was caught between two urban growth boundaries in which the distance was less than 6 miles. She had there was no way she could be outside of 3 miles of any urban growth boundary at that point.
Thank you.
This particular plot of ground is on the major traffic corridor from Portland to Mount Hood at the intersection of Highway 212 just east of Boring. Has a major interchange at that point.
Gail, what you said is correct. And this law doesn't get to the speaker's church anyway because it's 2 miles.
It absolutely does get to her facility because it mentions if the urban growth boundaries are within 6 miles of each other. It is. In all other instances, it is obviously a 2 mile boundary.
Sure. Senator Beyer.
Can I have the CDC staff back? The LCD?
Yeah. ANC. Their church.
Help me understand this. The statute as it reads now says that counties that have adopted marginal lands, that churches can be sited in any area zoned for exclusive farming zones. That's the statute language. The commission has adopted administrative rules that has restricted that further. Is that the situation?
Chair Starr, Senator Beyer, that's correct. This amendment is repeated in two places because we, in essence, in the statute have two exclusive farming zones. The one you cited applies in Lane and Washington counties because they're the only two counties that have adopted the marginal lands provision. Okay. And then this language is repeated again on page 7, which amends 215-283, which is the exclusive farm use zone that applies to all the rest of the 34 counties. But to the, I think, core of your question, the statute authorizes churches and cemeteries in exclusive farm use zones. The commission has adopted a rule that has limited churches and schools and a few other uses either within 3 miles of an urban growth boundary or on high-value farmland, even if that high-value farmland is beyond the 3 miles.
Has that been tested in court?
It has been. You know, Lane County versus LCDC and the commission's authority to adopt those rules was upheld by the Supreme Court of Oregon.
So to be real clear, the statutory law of the state is that the legislature has permitted churches in EFU land anywhere, but the administrative law is that the commission has further restricted where those could be.
Senator Starr, Senator Beyer, that's correct.
Okay. We're come forward. We got make it brief. Chairman Starr, members of the committee, thank you very much for this opportunity to clarify one issue raised by a question by Senator Bryant. In response to the issue, could the exceptions process be employed? The witness, Mr. Woods, said that he was informed by Oregonians in Action attorney Dave Honeycutt that no, the exceptions process doesn't apply or could not be brought.
You didn't put your name on the record.
Oh, I beg your pardon. My name is Charlie Sundell, staff attorney for 1000 Friends of Oregon. The statute, RRS 197-732, the exceptions process, it would be difficult to describe a situation based on the testimony by Mr. Wood, which is more tailor-made for the exception statute than the case of this church siting. That's precisely what RRS 197-732 is designed for. It's a process that exists in law for taking agricultural land and rezoning it for purposes other than exclusive farm use. And I wanted to clarify that, indeed, existing law does accommodate that, and that the statement that the exceptions process is not available to these proponents is entirely false. Thank you for the opportunity to clarify that.
Senator Beyer.
You're saying that working with Clackamas County, they could go through, if the county so chose, and through the exceptions process and get a siting?
Chairman Starr and Senator Beyer, that's absolutely correct. There's a very popular myth in land use law that the exceptions process is somehow an unattainable goal that is too...
in Lane and Washington counties because they're the only two counties that have adopted the marginal lands provision.
Okay.
And then this language is repeated again on page 7, which amends 215-283, which is the exclusive farm use zone that applies to all the rest of the 34 counties. But to the core of your question, the statute authorizes churches and cemeteries in exclusive farm use zones. The commission has adopted a rule that has limited churches and schools and a few other uses either within 3 miles of an urban growth boundary or on high-value farmland, even if that high-value farmland is beyond the 3 miles. It has been. Lane County versus LCDC, and the commission's authority to adopt those rules was upheld by the Supreme Court of Oregon.
So the so to be real clear, the statutory law of the state is that the legislature has permitted churches in EFU land anywhere. But the administrative law is that the commission has further restricted where those could be.
Senator Starr, Senator Beyer, that's correct.
We're come forward. We got I get brief. Chairman Starr, members of the committee, thank you very much for this opportunity to clarify one issue raised by a question by Senator Bryant in response to the issue to the exceptions process be employed. The witness, Mr. Woods, said that he was informed by Oregonians in Action attorney Dave Honeycutt that no, the exceptions process doesn't apply or could not be brought.
You didn't put your name on the record.
Oh, I beg your pardon. My name is Charlie Sundell, staff attorney for 1000 Friends of Oregon. The statute, RRS 197-732, the exceptions process, it would be difficult to describe a situation based on the testimony by Mr. Wood, which is more tailor-made for the exception statute than the case of this church siting. That's precisely what RRS 197-732 is designed for. It's a process that exists in law for taking agricultural land and rezoning it for purposes other than exclusive farming use. And I wanted to clarify that, indeed, existing law does accommodate that, and that the statement that the acceptance process is not available to these proponents is entirely false. Thank you for the opportunity to clarify that.
Senator Beyer.
You're saying that working with Clackamas County, they could go through, if the county so chose, and through the exceptions process and get a siting?
Chairman Starr and Senator Beyer, that's absolutely correct. There's a very popular myth in land use law that the exceptions process is somehow an unattainable goal that is too difficult to obtain. The reason for that is that if you go to the case law books on the shelf and read the cases about exceptions law, you're reading about a tiny handful of all the exceptions that are approved every year that get challenged, and those are the most specious ones. Those tend to be, or those are sometimes overturned in the case law because they are indeed species. It's not true that there weren't other available lands and so forth.
What was the RS site?
RS 197-732.
Are you implying by bringing that up that that process would be supported by 1000 Friends? You wouldn't object if they went through that?
1000 Friends has supported the exceptions process. Yes, that's right.
Specifically, if the church were to apply under the exception process, could they expect the 1000 Friends would oppose it?
Chairman Starr and Senator Beyer, I'm here on another bill today. I don't know the facts of this case. The point of my testimony is they'd be using available law for citing this use. Rather than trying to amend the law to add new uses to the EFU zone, there are dozens of bills every session that comes before the legislature to add new uses to the EFU zone because people perpetually ignore the exceptions law. The exceptions law is ignored in part by perpetuating myths that it's impossible to obtain, even though many are approved every year. My opinion, my legal opinion, is that because some people can perpetuate that myth by saying, look at these case laws, they always get overturned. Well, that's really just a tiny fraction of the exceptions that are approved by local governments every year. The vast majority go fail through without any great controversy.
it's really just a matter of being able to scrutinize the facts of the case. Is it really true that there is no other land available that could accommodate that use? That's the criteria of the statute. It's available for...
Thank you very much. We've closed the public hearing and open work session on House Bill 3282. Without Bill 3282, the floor of the Duke Pass recommendation. Senator Miller has moved House Bill 3282 to the floor of the Duke Pass recommendation. Further discussion?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Miller.
I appreciate the questioning, Senator Beyer. Interesting the discussion of the exceptions process. I'm sure that in light of the testimony provided by the staff of the ALCD that someone seeking to get an exception through that process would just have extraordinary confidence that they would have a fair hearing based on the stated opposition to this bill in this context. And that's just the last testimony just challenged reality. I would further state that it is also interesting to have, I think, and not unusual, staff of agencies that we have created come in and tell us how to act. I think maybe that would do a little more listening. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Clerk, call the roll.
Senator Bryan.
Aye.
Senator Miller.
Aye.
Chair
Aye. Having received the necessary majority, House Bill 3282 is moved to the floor of the Duke Pass recommendation. Chair will carry. The Senate Republicans are in caucus at 9:45. We have I'm going to reconvene the hearing that I recessed on House Bill 2885. Ask Ann Hennis, Charles Swindell, Bob Rindy, if you would all come forward, please. We have almost exactly 5 minutes. Brief in your testimony.
Chair Starr, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Ann Hannis, Assistant State Forester with the Oregon Department of Forestry. House Bill 2885 would allow counties to divide a five-acre parcel with a dwelling off of parcel zoned for forest use or mixed farm and forest use without considering whether the remaining parcel meets minimum land division standards. There are several concerns that we have. One, it removes a key compromise provision of legislation passed in 1995, Senate Bill 683. It would essentially allow landowners to divide off dwellings and create many small forest parcels, therefore creating a number of substandard parcels throughout forest land that would result in increasing conflicts as well as overall reducing management of our forest land. One of the things I do want to say, we did speak with Mr. Nussbaum after he testified. For the record, this bill has been gotten stuffed in the House, so it really, as we talk with him, it doesn't address his concerns that are in there of providing for a second dwelling, because this essentially would allow you to have a dwelling by pulling off a five-acre parcel, and the remaining parcel then would not be able to be, you would not be able to have a dwelling on there. as I understand the bill. So with that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Questions? Thank you. Maybe you just remind me, what was the compromise in 1995? I was here, but I wasn't on the Land Use Committee.
That was one where you could, if there was an existing dwelling on, you could carve off a five-acre parcel, and then the remaining forest dwelling would then be merged or consolidated with a with another forest land. And this allowed forest landowners to get a large parcel of land combined into a large parcel of land, so it was not encumbered by a dwelling. However, it meant that additional dwellings could not be created on the remaining parcels, and the parcels created by the bill would be full-sized and available for timber production only. And that was Senate Bill 683. And that was one that we had no problems with that bill, Senate Bill 683.
Your testimony is that intent of Mr. Nussbaum is not met by the amended bill?
That's my understanding, Senator Starr, because as I understand it, Mr. Nussbaum wanted a second dwelling. This did not provide for that second dwelling.
So he was really testifying to the original bill.
I believe so, Senator Starr.
Thank you. That the testimony of the other witnesses as well.
Mr. Chair, my name is Bob Rindy, and I'm with the Department of Land Conservation and Development, and I'll also be as brief as I can. I was involved in the discussion in the 1985 session with Senate Bill 683, which we are now amending the agreement there. The proposal in the 85 session was that many times forest landowners want to purchase a property to add to their holdings, especially the larger timber companies. But it might have, in many cases, does have a dwelling on it. And so Senate Bill 683 had simply authorized the timber company to cut that dwelling off on a small five-acre parcel. And there were two conditions that were agreed to broadly by all concerned. And those two conditions were that the remaining parcel, the large parcel, would be at least the minimum lot size for a timber parcel, either a 40 or an 80 acre, depending on where you are in the state. That's the minimum lot size. So the parcel that the timber companies were interested in, the dwelling had been cut off, would be a full size 40 or 80, which is what they like to trade. The second condition was that no dwelling would be built on that larger parcel. What this bill does is it takes away the first condition. So you still wouldn't be able to build a dwelling, but you would be able to you would no longer have the requirement that it be at least a 40 or 80 parcel. And I don't know whether it's inadvertent or not. What that means is, for example, you might have a 10-acre parcel or even a 6-acre parcel now in a forest zone. And this bill would authorize that to be divided so that the dwelling would remain on a 5-acre parcel. And then the remainder parcel that supposedly the timber company would be interested in could be of any size. It could be 1 acre, 2 acre, 3 acre, 5, 10. And I'm afraid that that's where we will see this provision used most frequently, in that we will be creating a lot of small parcels instead of the large traded timber parcel that was originally the intent of Senate Bill 683. And so that's why our department is concerned about this legislation. We don't think we would like to do away with that provision to make sure that the remainder timber parcel is at least usable for timber forestry management.
Thank you very much. Time has expired, and we're closing the hearing and closing the Senate Rules and Elections Committee for this day.